Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Well, we do this about quarterly. It's time for us again to compile another UPR community book list. We know that public radio listeners are avid readers by and large, and so we're taking advantage of that, giving each other suggestions for some good reading. So today's program, we're inviting you to email us to upraccess@gmail.com. Do that anytime during the hour, upraccess@gmail.com with your list. Could be one book, could be many. And we'll put that up on our website, upr.org, later today. Give ourselves some suggestions for some good reading, maybe some books that we've missed. So we want to know what you're reading. Email that, as I said, to upraccess@gmail.com. Is there a book that's had a big impact on you? This could be new books. We'll be talking to various booksellers throughout the hour for new books. Or it could be an older book that had an impact on you. That you've returned to, maybe a book you're looking forward to reading, maybe a personal story connected to a favorite book. We'd love to hear about fiction, nonfiction, young adult, children's books, anything you're reading. So, again, upraccess@gmail.com. Later in the hour, we'll be hearing from booksellers from Weller Bookworks, the King's English Bookshop, and Back of Beyond Books in Moab. And we welcome in, as always, UPR friend, avid reader, Elaine Thatcher. Elaine, thanks
Hi,
for coming in.
Hi, how are
you? Good, good. Doing good. How about you?
I'm good.
Good.
Yep.
Well, let's jump right in. What have you been reading?
Well, the thing that has taken most of this the last couple of months for me is David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. You know, I love Dickens. I've read a few of his pieces, his works, and this is... I read Bleak House, and it was considered by some to be his masterpiece, but David Copperfield is considered by others to be his masterpiece. And it's quite autobiographical. As always, Dickens is a great storyteller. You know, the characters are interesting and funny, and there's always difficulty for children, you know.
Right.
Young people reflecting on his own past, I think. And... you know, it's just a wonderful read. It's something you look forward to reading each day, you know. Unfortunately, I do most of my recreational reading at night, and I often fall asleep while I'm reading. So,
right.
So it can take me a while to get through a book. I do a lot of other reading as well, you know, in art books and religion books and things. And so I don't tend to share those here, but... this is one that I really enjoyed and is definitely a worthwhile read.
Yeah, and it's a book you can come back to, I guess, day after day and pick up the thread.
Yeah, you can. And the characters are so memorable. You know, the Mr. Micawber in David Copperfield is a sort of comic character who is always waiting for his ship to come in and. But good heart of gold, you know.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Yeah. Oh, great. So David Copperfield.
Yes.
By Dickens.
Yep, I recommend it.
So are you, did you finish it or you're still?
I finished it.
You finished it. Had you read it before?
No.
Okay, so the first time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes we have an idea of a book, right?
With books like Dickens, you know, you kind of know what they're about because they've been around for so long. But really, there's nothing. I mean, it's fun to watch the adaptations on TV and movies. And in fact, you know, I did watch one of the adaptations on television of David Copperfield after I read it, and it was great. But you know, and they bring those characters to life, but Dickens does a great job of bringing characters to life anyway. And there's just nothing to replace reading his subtle humor and his less subtle humor. I mean, and the ups and downs of the drama. It's great. If you don't read classic books, you should read a few. I'm always slow on the uptake for new books because if it's on the New York Times bestseller list, I don't always take that as a great recommendation. It might be popular, but it may not be something I want to read.
Yeah.
but these classics, you know, they're enriching. They increase your understanding of the past, and they're just a way to enlarge your mind a little, I think.
Yeah.
All books are kind of like that, but I like reading classics.
Yeah. Well, I'm on about page 5 of Les Misérables.
Oh, that's a good one.
So Victor Hugo. I spent some time trying to search out a good translation. There's a newer translation that I chose upon record. You know, I spent quite a bit of time, you know, which translation is better than the other translation, that kind of thing. So we'll see how I do, right? I'm on page 5.
But. Yeah, the thing that you may not recognize is that the beginning of that book is all about the priest.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you've seen movies or TV versions of it or talked about it, you know the story is all about Jean Valjean, but the first part of it is about the priest. And I remember when I read it, it was like, well, when do we get to the story?
Right.
But this backstory about the priest is an important part of it. So don't get discouraged.
Okay. All right. I'll plow through. And I do know that Hugo does these digressions. And I'll probably skip some of those if I find myself getting bogged down.
Yeah. But it's a wonderful book. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll keep plowing through. By the way, I think I chose Christine Doniger's translation from 2015. It's interesting to read the debate about translations.
Yeah, it's very interesting, yeah, because translators, they don't translate word for word. They have to have a literary quality, first of all, to reflect the skill of the original writer, but they also have to deal in idioms, and I mean it's a real art form. I don't remember which translation I read, but you know, the story came through.
Yeah. Now I do remember trying to read Don Quixote in the original Spanish. I did this for a class.
I tried to read
that
it.
That was tough because this is Elizabethan, this kind of Shakespearean Spanish, right?
And
That was hard on my rudimentary Spanish, right? It was tough going for me.
I tried to read it. I was in a 9th grade humanities class, or 12th grade, actually. It's 12th grade. And I didn't read it. I didn't get through it, you know, at the time. It was in English, but it was, I hadn't learned how to read some things yet.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. On the other hand, Gabriel Garcia Marquez was a little better going in Spanish.
Well, and it's more modern.
More modern. And, there's some wonderful English translations, but if you speak Spanish, I guess...
My Spanish isn't good enough to read in those books, but I've read Marquez in English.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful writer.
Yes.
100 Years of Solitude, right?
And I love...
Love the Time of Cholera.
One of the things I love about some of that South American and Latino literature is the magic realism that plays a role in that, and it's not something we Americans do. We don't understand that.
Yeah.
That's that different way of thinking about the world. Mm. And so that's another expanding sort of mind expanding kind of experience is to read South American authors for that.
Yeah. I recommend at least pick up 100 Years of Solitude and read the first sentence. it's maybe the most famous first sentence of any book.
I don't remember. What is the first sentence?
It has to, well, let me pull it up here. It rivals Pride and Prejudice, I think. Let's see.
Well, and The Best of Times and The Worst of Times, there's that, you know. But, you know, Dickens and Austen, you have to compete with those, so.
At one point I had it memorized in Spanish, but I'll do it in English here. Many years later, as he faced the firing squad, Colonel Aureliano Buendia was to remember that distant afternoon when his father took him to discover ice.
Yes.
So
what a fabulous thing.
So it begins.
Fabulous.
You jump already into that magical realism.
You're in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's some of our the classics that we've read or are planning on reading.
And there's always Wodehouse.
There's always Wodehouse. Yes. Yes. Every day is a good day for P.G. Wodehouse. Yes. I've been getting into Blanding's Castle.
Oh, I've only seen seen the British sitcom based on it, but I haven't read the books.
Yeah, there's a lot of, of course, it's all farce.
Yes.
But this is in a bucolic English countryside, right? So you got the Jeeves and Wooster, you got the Mulliner stories, but Blanding's Castle is another whole series of books, right, that that you can enjoy. I read kind of recently the prequel to Blanding's Castle. It's called Something New. Just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book. I've never really read a bad Wodehouse book.
He's reliable. Relief from the world.
It really is. All right. Well, we have Catherine Weller on the line here. Weller Bookworks. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, good morning. It's a pleasure. I always love to hear people talk about books, so I tune in early to listen to you all.
Well, you've been hearing us. We've been getting back into classics. Elaine, more than me, she actually read David Copperfield recently. I'm on page 5 of Les Miserables, so we'll see how I do.
Yeah, I love that. It's one of the things I miss as a book buyer is that I have to constantly read new things, so I can't circle back necessarily to old things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someday, if I retire, I'm going to be reading a lot of things I read when I was young, a lot of things that I didn't read and should have, and it's going to be fun.
That'll be great.
Oh, yeah.
But in the meantime, we want to know what's new out there. So what's on your list?
Oh, there's so much. I've got to say, January to March can sometimes be a very sleepy season in publishing. It's one of those bridge times, and then stuff really picks up in April. This January to March was, it had so many excellent books, it was hard to choose. So I'll just plunge in. The first one was a novel I read by Charlotte McConaughey called Wild Dart Shore. And this novel is almost perfect, and I'm going to say something bold here. I'm going to say it's got something for nearly everyone. It's got mystery elements. It has wonderful characterization and story arc if you read for that kind of thing. It's got it's cli-fi. It's got some climate fiction going on, and there's even a ghost. So there are a lot of tropes, and it begins with a woman who's been shipwrecked, and she washes up on the shore of a very isolated Antarctic island that is the home to a seed bank that's charged with storing the world's seeds in case of famine. And the rising sea waters are starting to endanger the seeds there. She is battered and bruised. The caretaker family, not the scientists who are also there, the caretaker family picks her up and slowly nurses her back to health. Everybody has secrets. Everything is not as it seems. And it is just captivating. It is so well written. So worth your time. And it's called Wild Dart Shore by Charlotte McConaughey.
I learned a new term, cli-fi.
Oh, yes. Sorry for the jargon, cli-fi, yep. It can be either positive or negative.
I'm sure.
It's not always dystopian. So this has a, it feels kind of dark at times, but it's ultimately very hopeful.
Good.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
Yep, the next novel is one called Tilt by Emma Pettit. It came out in March and got a certain amount of acclaim, as have all of these novels. It starts with something that those of us who live in the earthquake parts of Utah would just find terrifying. A very pregnant woman, she's due to deliver in a week or two, if not sooner, is in an IKEA in Portland looking for a crib when the great big earthquake that's been predicted in the Northwest, and there is a big earthquake predicted for the Northwest, happens. And I can't think of anything more terrifying than being in the warehouse part of an IKEA when the earthquake comes. And it is so vivid. And what happens in this novel, the narrative is this woman describing in real time trying to get home when the entire infrastructure of Portland has been devastated. And society, of course, is kind of has fallen apart. She's on foot. She has to walk miles and miles and miles. So there's the real-time narration of that, and then there's the narration in her head where she is talking to her unborn child, whom she calls Bean. And you get to have the backstory of how of her life and how she found herself where she is. It is just so well done. What a stunning narrative, both the recounting of her life and the idea of trying to walk when you lost a shoe to a shelf collapse in the warehouse and you're going miles and there's no water and people are just trying to help themselves survive, never mind you. It's really quite well done. It's so very captivating.
What was that title again?
Tilt.
Oh, like tipping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like everything tilted.
Uh-huh.
And it's
yeah.
Emma Pattee. I've got two more novels. There's a romp that I'll mention really quickly called Tartufo. Oh, so good, so funny. If you need an escape, this is it. It's set in a remote Italian village where the world's largest truffle has been found. They decide to publicly auction it off to be able to revitalize the village because it's dying. But the truffle is stolen. So it's just funny. It's magical. If you like rustic Italian settings, this book will take you there. Quirky characters, everything you need in a real romp. Tartufo is Italian for truffle. And This is by Kira Jan Buxton. Quickly, I'll mention Antidotes by Karen Russell. Again, knocks your socks off. She does an amazing job of combining historic fiction and speculative fiction, both. Although this is solidly in what people would call the literary fiction category. And this is set in the Dust Bowl in the Midwest in the 1930s, right after Black Sunday, which is the day a storm came through in the Midwest and the sky turned black and it devastated everything. There are four characters, one of whom is a woman who calls herself an antidote. She is this class of women that are also called witches and other things. That vaults is another term. And what they do is they hold people's memories for them, like a bank. The unbearable, the terrible, the thing you can't stand that is too devastating to carry with you. So you kind of block it away in your mind. Well, in this book, these women will listen to go into a trance and listen to your memory, give you a deposit slip, and you can retrieve it later should you want to process it.
Huh.
And so the whole book is about memory, really, and the depression. The situations that people are dealing with are very real there. It's set in a very rural town, so the farmers whose farms are collapsing, their lives are falling apart, they're leaving the town and moving to where something can be better. There's a photographer from the WPA who's documenting the area as they did back then. And there's this vault. It's, wow. She is an extraordinary novelist. People have been waiting for a novel instead of books of stories from her for a minute. And this was worth the wait.
Can you tell us again the title?
Yes, Antidote by Karen Russell.
Great.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, and I don't know how much time you have. I've got a couple nonfiction if you want, but if I blathered on about fiction this time, that's unusual for me. So let's hear them.
Let's hear a couple of nonfiction, yeah.
Okay. First one came out in January 2. It's called Crazies. It's by Amy Gamerman. And the subtitle to this tells you a lot about this book: The Cattleman, The Wind Prospector, and A War Out West. The Crazies is a mountain range, a mountain, and the mountains around it in Montana. It's a real place. But you could also interpret this to be any number of people dealing with this story. And what happens is, this is nonfiction. I'll take a step back and say Amy Gamerman is a reporter from New York. She reports on the lives and the houses of the rich, the very, very rich. She went to Montana to look at some rich guy's second home and stumbled on this story and thought, whoa, this is interesting. And the story is, there was a rancher who, like a lot of ranchers right now, doesn't know how he can keep what is left of his ranch for his family to pass it on, the thing that was he bought from his parents, the thing that they bought from their parents, that they have all, you know, sweated and bled on for all of these years. He's not an environmentalist by any stretch of the imagination, doesn't even really believe in climate change, but he does realize that the thing that could help him keep his ranch is to lease it to wind power production. So he tries to do that, and he is blocked by these very wealthy property owners, one of whom is a cattle and oil man from Texas. So they're not all Easterners who've come in and fallen in love with Montana, although many of them are, because they don't want wind power in their area. They want unbroken vistas so they can have the land as they bought it, which is this remarkable place that they can hunt and fish and recreate on and then just enjoy the astounding beauty. There are challenges personally. The town kind of comes apart a little bit. It goes to court more than once. There's more than one wind developer who tries to get wind power on this guy's land. And it's just so well written. It kind of jumps between court cases and the historical line of the wind development, the various wind developers, the different ranchers with different opinions, the different wealthy, extremely wealthy, we're talking 1% here, landowners who have different opinions again. And what made this book so fascinating to me was Amy Gamerman, this reporter of The Rich and Famous. She's from New York City. She has no dog in this fight. She doesn't care. So it's very neutral in tone, which I've heard people on both sides be frustrated by that. I found it made for a really compelling narrative, and it's called The Crazies. So please, that's a wonderful book to read. There's a piece of history, Viking history, called Embers of the Hands, Hidden Histories of the Viking Age by Eleanor Barraclough. And what Eleanor Barraclough, she's a British historian, does in this book is focus on lesser-known aspects of Vikings. We all have these beliefs that the Viking period was a certain set of time. It involved these big, hairy guys pillaging around Europe. And she goes so much deeper than that. It's so interesting to read about the roles of women, the roles of the enslaved, the belief systems of the Vikings, and the extraordinarily long period of the Vikings. It wasn't all raiding. Before they started raiding and going to town on England, they were trading actively throughout Europe, sailing about for hundreds of years before that business started. You learn about dice games and their grooming. They put a lot of stock in grooming. What you saw on TV, they're now finding so much about grooming that it can't possibly be right. It's just these everyday details about both the raiders and the people who settled and who supported the Viking raiders back home. It's so interesting. It goes over that span of time, so it gives you a whole new view of Eric the Red, who isn't mentioned specifically in there. But just, you know, we all, when we think about Viking, we think about Eric the Red.
Yeah.
This will help you see so many more people.
That's great.
All right. Tell us the title again.
Embers of the Hands, and it's by Eleanor Barraclough.
All right. Wonderful. Well, that's a great list, and we'll have your full list on our website, upr.org, later today.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. That's Catherine Weller from Weller Bookworks. Later in the program, we'll have David Everett from Back Beyond Books. Following a break coming up, we'll be talking with Ann Holman from the King's English Bookshop. Before we go to break, I want to get this in from our listener, Mon Gregory, who has emailed in. Hope you will as well. UPRAccess@gmail.com. UPRAccess@gmail.com with your list. Could be one book or many. Here's Mon Gregory's list. So he has several categories. Under the fiction category, he's recommending Joseph Hansen's 12 David Brandstetter mystery series, one of the first featuring an openly gay detective. So the beginning book is Fade Out, published in 1970.
Wow.
Under poetry, he's recommending Danez Smith's Bluff from 2024, explores a poet's responsibility in times of racist violence. Young adult book, Kengo Kurimoto's Wildfull from 2024, gorgeous artwork telling the story of a troubled teen discovering the healing power of nature. And a picture book, Sarah Lundberg's The Cat Way. This is from last year as well. A person lets their cat lead the way on a walk that becomes an adventure.
So I like that.
Sarah Lundberg's The Cat Way. Then Mon says, teachers and parents looking for thought-provoking children's books, good for opening conversations about big ideas, might Google Thinking in Stories. That's a blog by the Institute for the Advancement of Philosophy for Children. So Google Thinking in Stories to get thought-provoking children's books for opening conversations about big ideas. So that's Mon Gregory's list. We'll have that up on our website.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you, Mon. We'll take a brief break. Come back with Ann Holman. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm here with Elaine Thatcher. It's our quarterly show, UPR Community Book List. So we're compiling a UPR Community Book List, and this is going to be up later today on upr.org. We'd love to get what you're reading. We may have, that might be a kind of blind spot for us, right? So we want to know what you're reading. We want to read that. Maybe you want to read what we're reading. You can email us to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. We're talking to some booksellers to get what's the latest and greatest. And we bring in now Ann Holman from the King's English Bookshop. Ann, thanks for joining us. Do we have you, Ann? Okay, we'll have to get Ann back here. In the meantime, what's next on your list, Elaine?
Well, a local author. I have talked about her before. Ona Saporin is a local poet and writer, and she has written three mystery novels. And I just finished the third one. They are now called Leah Contarini Mysteries.
Yeah.
They take place in Tuscany, and where Ona and her husband Steve have spent a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And this last one is called The Spaces Between the Threads. You know, Ona's husband, Steve, is a folklorist. And so there seems like there's always some sort of folkloric elements in these books. This time she's studying lace makers.
Oh, great.
In Italian lace makers. And there are murders and so forth. But one of the things I really like about... Now, Ona goes under the nom de plume of Libby Sipporin, L-I-B-I, Libby Sipporin. And so that's where you would look for it. She's really great at creating a sense of the place itself. She's lived there a lot. She knows it, and she creates this enveloping sense of Lower Tuscany. Mm-hmm. And the Etruscan Via Cave, these pathways that are down into this rock. Anyway, I highly recommend them. The first one, I think, was called Bitter Maremma. Second was If Two of Them Are Dead. That's like as in three can keep a secret if two of them are dead. Mm-hmm. And this third one is The Spaces Between the Threads, which is a reference to this lace making. And so I really love these books. They are not your typical pulp mysteries. That's why I like them.
Wonderful. This is, she goes by Libby Sipporin in the books,
Libby,
right? What's the title again?
The Spaces Between the Threads.
All right. Wonderful. Well, we do have Anne Holman on the line now. Anne, thanks for joining us.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
Good, good.
Hi.
How are things at the King's English?
Oh, things are good. Really busy. Fun.
Good. Well, that's
nice
good. That's good, yeah.
Be out on the patio, finally.
Yeah, yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah, it's the weather's a little better now, so that's great. Well, yeah, interested to know what's the latest and greatest. What's on your list?
Well, what I wanted to say really quickly was I was listening to you talk about classics, and I have a really old beat-up copy of Middlemarch that I got in a book swap.
Ah,
and
yeah.
I have been looking it on my shelf for probably 10 years and uh-huh. thinking, I really want to read that. I really want to read that. So I think we all share that,
yep.
that same
yep.
longing.
Oh, yeah.
That's on my list as well.
I've read that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did
you like it, Elaine? I mean,
yes,
it's
yes.
so big.
Yes, I did like it, yeah.
Yeah, we're speaking of most famous beginning lines. Middlemarch has one of the more famous closing lines of it, you know, of any novel.
I don't remember.
Talks about something about the main character, you know, the big forces in the world, but because this character lived, things are a little better in her world, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's much more touching than I just made it sound, but anyway.
I'm going to have to go read the end of the book. Yeah,
right, right. and I've not read the whole book. I've just kind of, you know, skipped to the end a little bit. But anyway, yeah.
Well, today, you know, unusually for me, I was listening to Catherine say she usually starts with nonfiction. I would like to start with nonfiction today because one of my favorite books of the season, and I know Brooke was on your show, Tom, Encountering Dragonfly. Notes on the Practice of Reenchantment by Brooke Williams. I just loved this book. I thought it was, I mean, the thing is everything is so strange and tough right now. And his whole idea of looking at the world subjectively rather than objectively and talking about, you know, okay, you look at a dragonfly and do you see a dragonfly or do you see enchantment? And can you transfer that to so many other things in your life and just stop and look. And that makes me feel hopeful in a not very hopeful time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just loved it. I don't know. You did talk to him, didn't you, Tom?
I did. Yeah. In fact, we did Zoom and he was in his home in Spanish Valley, Castle Valley. Is it Castle Valley? Anyway. And,
yeah, Castle Valley.
And his camera was pointed to this great big picture window and this beautiful scene behind him. I couldn't translate that to listeners, but it was wonderful to be talking to him in his setting that he loves there. Yeah, it's a wonderful book.
I thought it was really great. So the next one I'm going to talk about is The Last Miner, a memoir of Alta's last mining expeditions. This is published by the University of Utah, and it's by a man named Dick Fluey. And he worked in the mines up at Alta starting in the 1950s and until maybe the end of the 60s. It's so interesting. I don't know if you remember a book called The Lady in the Ore Bucket from many years ago. Also,
yeah, I don't remember
college.
That one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that one? I love that book. This is, you know, kind of same flavor, but more anecdotal. And his stories are so funny and so interesting. And, you know, those guys were down in the dark for days on end. He has stories about the Tommyknockers. He has stories about his friends and what they experienced. And he just, we did an event with him, and he just stood up and just started telling stories. And everybody was just, you could have heard a pin drop. I think, you know, for Utah, where mining has played such a big role in our lives, to hear it firsthand from somebody who really lived it. And most of those mines, especially up at Alta, you can't get down into them anymore. They've closed them off. But he knew every inch of every tunnel in Little Cottonwood Canyon. It was fascinating.
Mm. Wow.
So that's the last miner. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great.
I also wanted to mention, Catherine Coles has a new book of poetry out called Time and Chance. And I feel like sometimes I'm a little nervous about poetry, just, you know, understanding it and appreciating it. Mm-hmm. I've known Kate for so many years, and this is her 10th collection, and it's really kind of thinking about her mom and dad, who she lost, and Mark Strand. And she's funny, too, which is people don't expect it, but she's also funny. But it's about loss, and it's about healing, and it's about her dogs. It was just, it's delightful. And it's not a big book. You can pick it up and read it, you know, here and there. I love to have a book of poetry by my bed.
What was it called again?
It's called Time and Chance, and it's Catherine Coles. She does most of hers, I think, I'm just going to grab it here and look at it, by Turtle Point Press.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful.
Just a program, you know, we'll have her on, I think, next week or the week after here on Access Utah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, I'm good. So glad. Yeah.
You mentioned, and, you know, nervousness about understanding poetry. When I have a poet on, that's what makes me most nervous is I will not understand their poetry. So,
if I don't, I know, it can be really daunting.
If I don't understand their poetry, it's going to make for a very stilted conversation. So that always worries me.
Don't you find, though, that by the time they start reading and you start talking, you go, oh,
yes,
I understand
indeed.
That, of
yes,
course.
Yes,
it penetrates.
Yeah,
yes.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. And then last but not least, on the nonfiction side, I'm very interested in a book that's coming out in July from Princeton University, and it's The Key to Everything, Mae Swenson, A Writer's Life.
Oh.
I don't know that much about her. I find her fascinating, and she's one of us. You know, she left for New York City in 1936 when she was 23 years old and pretty much lived the rest of her life there, but came back to Utah a lot. And I think her life is so intertwined in the history of the church here and her family. She was Swedish-American. And Tom, I don't know if you remember her brother. I met him a couple times, Paul.
Yes, I knew Paul.
Yeah,
yeah. I knew Paul.
Yeah, met
Did
Paul
you know Paul
times,
Lane?
Yeah.
And he was just delightful. And
yes,
so it's
he
always
was.
Been just something I'm just really interested in. So this is not coming out till July, but hopefully maybe you'll be able to talk to the author's name is Margaret A. Brucia.
Yeah, I think we're working on that. So hopefully we'll be able to
a quick anecdote. I went to the dedication of the Mae Sorensen room Swenson room years ago here at USU, and my father who was alive at the time, I said, I'm going to the dedication of the Mae Swenson room, and he says, my Mae Swenson? And I said, what? And it turns out Mae,
what a good story.
He said, we used to write poetry together.
Oh, that's great. That's
oh,
wonderful.
You're kidding. Oh, I love that story.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to do something lovely up there when the book comes out.
Yes.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about fiction. Am I doing okay on time?
Yeah, just a couple books, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can't not mention the Monkey Wrench Gang because it's the 50th anniversary.
Oh,
really?
And I know that's a book we all kind of grew up on. Wanted to monkey wrench or thought about monkey wrenching and probably didn't really do it, but as a young person, I was like, oh, I'm going to go put sugar in those gas tanks. I'm going to destroy those people, right? So the 50th anniversary, and I know Ken Sanders is working on reissuing his hardcover edition with the original R. Crumb illustrations. Really looking forward to that. And I think Harper's doing a reissue of it, too. So that's something that's just fun and
definitely
and
worth mentioning. Yeah, definitely worth mentioning.
And then I want to mention a debut novel. The author is Aaron John Curtis, and he is a bookseller at Books and Books in Miami, Florida. He's actually a Mohawk. And the book is called Old School Indian and actually takes place up in New York and kind of back and forth over the border of Canada. And it's sort of autobiographical, but it's definitely a novel about a young man who ends up at Syracuse University, University of Syracuse, and or in Syracuse, I'm getting that wrong probably. And his life story, he meets a young woman and they fall in love and kind of stay together for a long time. And it's the story of him getting sick with a really weird illness that nobody can make sense of. And so he goes home to his family, and there's a medicine man there who works with him. And it's just filled with magic, not real magic, but magical feelings and family and food and misunderstandings. And I just loved it. It's his first book, Old School Indian. And he's a young guy, Aaron. I think he's probably only in his 30s, maybe early 40s. And I hope we see some great things from him.
Yeah, tell us the author and title again.
It's Aaron John Curtis, and the title is Old School Indian.
All right. Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
And you'll get us your full list, I guess, so we can put it up on
our
website.
I did. I sent it to Robert already.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Thank you so much. Before you go, Ann, I pulled up that last line from Middlemarch.
Oh.
I'm going to read it for folks because I did not give it anywhere near justice. So speaking of the main character here, this is the last line. But the effect of her being on those around her was incalculably diffuse. For the growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts. And that things are not so ill with you and me, as they might have been, is half owing to the number who lived faithfully a hidden life and rest in uninvisited tombs.
Oh, beautiful.
It's beautiful and profound.
Wow. Yeah,
I didn't. Yeah.
Wow.
So when you pick up
I'll get back to you 10 years from now when I'm
there. You go.
Reading it.
You'll be heading toward that last line. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Maybe when I finish Les Miserables, I'll pick up Middlemarch as well. We can compare notes.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Everybody.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Ann Holman with Back and Beyond Books the King's English.
King's English
Bookshop in Salt Lake City. We're hoping to get David Everett from Back and Beyond here following a break. And we hope to hear from you as well. upraccess@gmail.com. upraccess@gmail.com is where to send your list. We'd love to know what you're reading and put that on our UPR community book list. We'll take a brief break here and come back with David Everett. Thanks for listening to Access U Time. Tom Williams. We are doing what we do about quarterly. We're compiling a UPR community book list. We know that many of us, UPR aficionados, are avid readers. So we'd love to know what you're reading. Maybe I'd want to read that and vice versa. So
yep.
We're compiling a list and we're putting that up at upr.org later today. So I'd love to hear your list. Could be one book, could be many. Fiction, nonfiction, young adult, children's, whatever it might be, whatever you're reading, and send that to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. We bring in now David Everett from Back and Beyond Books in Moab. David, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, David, I Googled you. That's always a dangerous thing. I brought it from the Moab Sun News. Former city manager returns to Moab to head bookstore. You're the former city manager?
That is true. Yeah, I was a city manager for about 3 years down here after working in the mayor's office in Salt Lake City for close to a decade.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, well, the things we learn, right?
Well, I went to high school in Colorado with a guy named Dave Everett, but it's probably not you.
It was not me. Not that I'm aware of, anyway.
You didn't grow up in Colorado. Yeah. Okay.
True.
All right. Well, interested to know what's on your list. What's first?
Yeah, we got a bunch of really interesting, I'd say, new releases and some that have been out for a while but are seeing a real resurgence in our store. I'm going to start with one called Never Whistle at Night, which has actually been out quite a while, but it's an indigenous dark fiction anthology. And for whatever reason, this is just flying off our shelves right now. And it's this really great collection of short stories by a bunch of indigenous authors that really kind of go into the night, as it were, and talk about, it's not really horror per se, but it is definitely like, I'd say, unsettling fiction from indigenous perspectives. Super interesting book that we're selling a ton of.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah. More recently published, and this is a national title that has seen a lot of publicity, but it's particularly popular down here. It won the Booker Prize in 2024, and that's Orbital by Samantha Harvey. A relatively short book, but a really incredible story, a novel about astronauts on their last journey through space and their just sort of dreamy, picturesque worldview that comes from that journey, talking through a 24-hour and 16 rotations around the Earth. So really one that's also selling really well for us. And then I'd say the third fiction title that one of our staff members also recently reviewed is called In the Distance by Hernan Diaz. And it's, I'd say, a modern, modern take on a 19th century Living in the West title. So it's truly a Western fiction book that is not your traditional from your traditional Western fiction authors, and really, really sold a lot of that and really enjoyed it. That one was also a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in fiction.
Great.
Yeah. So turning a little bit maybe to nonfiction, I'm excited and have recently read a book called Delusions and Grandeur, which is a collection of essays by a man named Mark Sundin, who used to live in Moab, and in fact, a bunch of his essays feature and are really centered around Moab, not exclusively, but a lot of them are, and they really talk about what it means to be a man in the West and the living in this new sort of old new West that we live in here in the Intermountain West in particular. Talks about tourism and just the economy and humanity, and just a really great collection of essays that talked through political activism as well and being outside in the West. And it's kind of a coming-of-age set of essays in a way, but he's someone that I knew personally back here, and we'll be featuring him as one of our guests in Moab down here at the end of the month. So excited about that. That's called Delusions and Grandeur by Mark Sundin. I believe that was a University of New Mexico Press publication.
Mm. So it sounds like it's kind of touching on gender politics or gender identities for men?
Less so, more, well, I guess you could maybe say it's, I'd say it's adjacent to that. I think it's more, I'd say more of like what it was like to sort of grow up in the 90s and 2000s, having, you know, fled west.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark Sundin has some great books. Glad to hear he's got another one out.
Yeah, totally. We, he wrote the Man Who Quit Money, which is about Daniel Suelo, who lived in Moab and decided he was going to live without money. And that book consistently sells well for us as well.
Okay, yeah,
being very Moab centric. So
okay,
we love that one. And then just a couple of others I mentioned really quickly: The Service Berry by Robin Wall Kimmerer. I'm sure y'all have talked about that.
Oh yes, mm-hmm.
Just a lovely little book that that really speaks, I think, to the moment. And people have really been enjoying that title as well. And then the last one is a little bit of a left curve. We have sold a ton of a book called The Modern Navajo Kitchen, recipes that celebrate the flavors and traditions of the Diné. It's a lovely book that has some fantastic illustrations and just simple recipes as well, and great, I'd say, narrative and explanation of some of the origins of these recipes. And so that's been a nice one for us to sell, kind of off, you know, a little bit off the radar for most people.
That sounds great.
That's great. That's a great list, eclectic list. That's great. Yeah,
I like it.
Your readers have good taste. Yeah,
they do. We like to think so.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. Well, we'll have that on our UPR community book list. David Everett, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
He's with Back and Beyond Books. Thank you. Well, we have about 30 seconds. Do you just want to mention another one? Or?
Well, I'm actually starting one called Abundance by Ezra Klein and Derek Thompson.
Oh, yes.
And it's about abundance politics or abundance economics, and I, so far, I'm not convinced.
Okay, all right.
But that's very early in the book, so we'll look forward to that.
Yeah. I've heard a lot about the book, right?
And yes.
I've seen both of those gentlemen on talk shows such, but I have yet to dip in the ball. I'll be interested to see what you think.
I'll loan it to you.
Okay, great. Yeah. That sounds good. Well, that's a great start, and you'll give us your entire list, right, Elaine,
yes,
as well?
Yes, it's already in Robert's hands. Yep.
Well, and you can still get us your book list to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And we'll have that list up on our website, upr.org, later today. So, Elaine, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
Happy reading.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.